Welcome to Sports Day Cowboys, a podcast all about the Dallas Cowboys, brought to you by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Michael Gelkin.
And I'm Calvin Watkins. We're just two Cowboys beat writers having a weekly real talk conversation about the latest with the team, including interviews, analysis, and debate. Thanks for being with us.
Calvin, you sure were down on Kellen Moore last week, but looky here. The Cowboys are 2-1. The run game rolled over the New York Giants on Monday Night Football, and now the Washington Commanders visit Sunday.
You know, my boy Kellen Moore did show me something, Michael, and so did my man CeeDee Lamb. We'll discuss both of them and hear from the great Dez Bryant and dig into what may be the NFL's best pass rush.
And we'll speak with our fellow Cowboys beat writer, the terrific David Moore. That's all coming up, so stay with us.
You know, Michael, I was so worried about what we were going to say regarding our main man, CeeDee Lamb, on the Sports Day Cowboys podcast this week, but he responded in such a positive way on Monday night that I'm just excited for him, and I'm excited for you.
You're worried because of that drop. That awful drop happened in the second quarter, right after the Cowboys converted a 3rd and 12 with a 27-yard run. Whatever momentum they had, it just deflated when he dropped that pass, and people on social media, they were calling for a number change. The 88 didn't suit him. People were, why is he laughing? Why is he smiling after a mistake like that? The public court of opinion can change very, very quickly in the NFL, where someone can go from a goat to the goat when the truth is probably somewhere between, but you have to credit CeeDee Lamb for the way he responded.
Finished that game with 8 catches for 87 yards. Now he had 2 drops. As you alluded to, the first drop, I don't know if he would have gotten to the end zone, but he dropped that pass at the Giants, I think, 19-yard line. And then it was a second drop on a 3rd down. They were trying to get close, you know, make a field goal try. And he just dropped it. He just walked to the sidelines like, gosh, what's going on here? And then, you know, the second half, he really exploded. He made that beautiful one-handed catch in the end zone. He got both feet in. It was a game winner. It just, that, you know, one of the things I'll say about Amari Cooper was that Amari Cooper was just steady. You know, CeeDee Lamb in these first 3 weeks, and you could obviously have a difference of opinion, of course, he's been so up and down. You know, his first half is terrible. Second half is great. We have not seen a complete game from CeeDee Lamb, but he's been fantastic, though, when he does play at an elite level.
I think CeeDee, the criticism, I think, is fair to levy. Too often, he makes the difficult look easy and the easy look difficult. If he can just figure out the small things, hone in on that, and he really focused on his hands this offseason because he really hadn't have a problem catching the football, he said, until last year. But he needs to be more consistent by doing those small things, and if he can do that, I think he is a wide receiver one. You know who does think he's a wide receiver one is Dez Bryant. Winning locker room, Monday Night Football, MetLife Stadium, in walks this 6'2" bearded man with a black cowboy hat, wearing a white Trayvon Diggs jersey. Pretty subtle. That's Dez Bryant. I asked him for his impressions of a fellow number 88, CeeDee Lamb, in the game that he just had.
I think what stood out to me is he blocked out all of the noise, just like what we just kind of talked about. Like, that's what you got to do, you know. Like, when you're wearing that 88, that's what's going to come with it. It's like you can't make a mistake. Things happen. You know, things didn't go his way. Then he come back and make a one-hand catch, you know. So that's big ups to him. He put us in a position to win that game. Yeah. And, you know, came up and made some more clutch catches after that. So, you know, that's what 88s do.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of judging too quickly, I owe my main man Kellen Moore an apology. I'm very sorry. Well, maybe not. Look, the standards are the standards. And, Michael, Kellen Moore has called a great game the last 2 weeks. And the only thing we got problems on 3rd down, Cowboys were 5-for-13 on 3rd down in that win against the Giants. But overall, the man is running the football. He's targeting CeeDee Lamb because, if you remember, in the offseason, Amari Cooper was asked about, can CeeDee Lamb be a number one receiver? And Cooper said, if the coordinator allows him to be. And we're seeing that with Kellen Moore. Cooper Rush is helping things. They're running a fantastic game. The line is helping him. Kellen Moore is doing his job finally.
Okay, so last week, I'm sensing the tide is shifting here, where you last week, after the lack of run game, the lack of third down conversions, you were done with Kellen Moore. I think your patience had kind of run out. Has he bought himself a little bit of time, in your view?
Benito, I was done with him. I don't know why. I mean, I wrote a column for the lovely Dallas Morning News that said, this man, if he wants to get a head coaching job, this ain't it. This was after week one. And I don't know if he'll get a head coaching opportunity this offseason because it's a long way to go. But I will say Kellen Moore has definitely redeemed himself over the last 2 weeks. And if he can continue to do that against Washington, hey, maybe I might tell him to send out his resume to a few teams in March or even February. But I was very impressed with what Kellen Moore has done. And I will say the head coach, Mike McCarthy, I think even though he's downplaying it now, but I think he called out Kellen Moore a couple of weeks ago when he said, we got to be more conservative. I'm talking to him more and more in meetings and that kind of thing. And I think it's worked. I can't say anything negative about Kellen Moore after these 2 weeks where the Cowboys have got this brief little win streak other than converting third downs.
That's fair. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Well, since we're talking about opinions changing of players, opinions changing about a coach, no one has to change their opinion about the Cowboys defense, namely the pass rush. They lead the NFL in sacks, 13 of them. And now, after having combined with DeMarcus Lawrence getting three of them, five sacks on Monday Night Football, in come the Commanders, who were just sacked 9 times by the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday. I don't know if we're going to see double-digit sacks. Let's not get crazy on this whole thing, but I think we can both agree that's where this game is probably going to be won, which is in the trenches and the advantage that the Cowboys have. What has stood out to you, Calvin, about exactly this area of the defense?
It's interesting because it was uncertainty coming into the season. I mean, we all knew what Micah Parsons could do, and we said, oh, he will open the door for DeMarcus Lawrence, who had 3 sacks against the Giants on Monday night. But we're seeing Dorrance Armstrong get sacks. We're seeing Dante Fowler with pressure. You know, they don't have to say, Micah Parsons, you have to go after the quarterback 100,000 times a game, because we got other guys who can do that. And when Parsons does go after the quarterback, he's getting double teamed. Sometimes he'll face 2 guys. He'll beat those guys, and another guy's waiting on him. You know, and it's just opening the door for so many good things. It's also helping out the secondary. You're seeing Trayvon Diggs, he got a pick late in that Giants game to seal it. I think he had like 3 or 4 pass breakups Monday night. So the whole thing is working beautifully. I can't say enough about what Dan Quinn has done with this pass rush. I think when we were talking to him on Tuesday, one of the things he said was this is fun for him. He's playing chess. You know, there are times where he's got 1 down lineman and he's got everyone standing up. Michael, talk to the people about how we saw DeMarcus Lawrence go from one spot of the line to the other on one of those pass rushes.
Yeah, it was a 3rd and long. And if you're a Cowboys fan who watched the game, you'll know which one I'm talking about. It's the one where Micah Parsons just blew through the right guard, toppled him backwards, hit the quarterback, Daniel Jones, and forced an incompletion. Cowboys were able to get off the field defensively. That play, if you look at DeMarcus Lawrence, just focus on the final 5 seconds leading up to the snap. It starts with DeMarcus Lawrence standing over center in kind of a 0 technique, 2-point stance, just kind of hovering. And then he bounces, literally hopping over to a 5 technique. So he's outside.
It's like a little guard. Rabbit bouncing around.
Yeah, so he's outside the tackle. Then he goes into a 3 technique just over the guard, and then that the gap there, and then the play begins. And so all that confusion, like, all right, was this guy a 0? Is he a 5? Is he a 3? It's an identification crisis for an offensive line when you got that going, as if having DeMarcus Lawrence and Micah Parsons on the same side wasn't a stress point enough.
You know what he is, Michael? He's DeMarcus Lawrence. He's Tank. That's what he is. Coming up next, we're going to talk to the senior statesman of the great Dallas Morning News, David Moore.
Hey, listeners, this is Damon Marks. I'm the Cowboys editor for the Dallas Morning News. That includes the Sports Day Cowboys podcast that you're listening to right now. What I love about this beat is the nonstop news cycle that is the Dallas Cowboys. But beyond that daily adrenaline rush, being able to reveal the human side of the players you watch on TV is a privilege. Calvin and Michael talk to these players each week to bring you the behind-the-scenes stories that you can't get anywhere else. If you want to support this good work, it's easy. Just subscribe to the Dallas Morning News and become a member. You'll find a special offer just for listeners at dallasnews.com/listen.
And we're back on Sports Day Cowboys. We are very excited to have David Moore join us. About 30 years total on the Dallas Morning News, 25 plus seasons covering the Cowboys, our colleague and friend.
You know, David does a wonderful podcast through this place called the Dallas Morning News. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's called Sports Day Insider. You should check him out. Does a beautiful job. He also has Evan Grant on there and the great Kevin Sherrington. Hi, David. How are you?
Both of you need to work on your sincerity. Nothing either one of you said was believable.
I know. I don't say anything believable.
People know you're old.
Yeah, I think we've established I'm old. Thank you.
One thing that doesn't get old is talking about this Cowboys defense, and I thought it was fantastic. I think he had a season, you know, almost had a season high in sacks. He had 6 against Cincy, 5 against the Giants. This is one of the better defensive units I've seen in a long time from the Cowboys. Wouldn't you agree, David?
Yeah, I don't know that we should anoint it as doomsday 2 yet, but this group is really good and is continuing to get better. I think if you go back to probably, you know, the 2012-2013 season when Wade Phillips was here, those were some pretty good defensive teams. You go back to that year that they were the number one seed, were 13-3. You look at that defensive front with DeMarcus Ware, Anthony Spencer, you had Ratliff in there, you had Newman in the secondary. I thought that was a very good defense. And that was, in my mind, that was the last time you had talent across the defensive board until last season. And you saw this group start to come together last season. In my mind, after that group in the early teens kind of disbanded, this has really been an offensive-driven franchise in terms of success. And basically, the only requirement for the defense was not to be a drag on the offense. You know, it was don't be so bad that you don't allow yourself to reach your potential as a team because you're holding the offense back. Just, you know, we're not even talking middle of the road a lot of those years, right? You know, you knew the only chance Dallas had of success was their offensive ability. And, you know, they were winning games 38-35, and that was not unusual. This current team is not built to win 38-35 for many reasons. And I think that's part of the reason you've seen a success, and it's a little been surprising since Dak Prescott has gone out, that this team, in my mind, is built to win these 20-17 games. But that's such a foreign concept, I think, for Cowboys fans based off of what we've seen from the previous 9 to 10 years. But I think everyone's kind of, you know, wrapping their arms around it now that this is a different team, Cowboys team, and how they go about winning than really what we've seen over the last decade, 10 years.
David, it's week 4 of the NFL season, so we're all operating in the land of small sample size. With that in mind, we were discussing last week, are the Giants for real after they were 2-0? Well, now the Cowboys have won 2 straight. Do you think what we're seeing is real? Are you buying that this is a team that can handle the adversity, can overcome what's thrown its way, and truly be competitive as playoff chase gets real?
Well, they haven't lost any ground. I mean, they were going to lose that opener. It was very clear. But when they lost Dak Prescott, I think the fact that they have not lost any ground since then, this has been the absolute best case scenario for them. And as you said, it's a small sample size, only 2 games. And a loss to Washington this coming weekend would change that equation and how you look at this group, right? And that should not be dismissed because you're still talking about a backup quarterback in this league and an offensive unit that is young in many key spots and still unproven in a lot of others, and doesn't have near the offensive talent that last year's group had. So I think we could still see some inconsistency here early. But the fact you haven't seen that in these two games and the way they responded initially is a really good sign. And I take it back to last year. You know, there were a lot of questions about what this defense would be going into last season. They lost the opener. Now, it was a much different loss to Tampa Bay than what you had this year's loss to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that was high scoring last year, remember?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But you still had the questions, especially defensively, right, about how they could stack up coming off that dreadful year, one of the worst in franchise history the year before in Mike McCarthy's first year as head coach. And what happened? Dallas lost to Marcus Lawrence in that opening game. You were saying, well, this is already a bad defense. What can it do? And then Micah Parsons burst on the scene. They used him in a different way, which I think they would have gotten to over the course of the season, but it was accelerated. And the way Dallas responded from losing to Marcus Lawrence early in the season really kind of put their identity in place and their DNA in place for the rest of the season. I think you're seeing, again, short sample size. Let's see this another game or two. But I think you're seeing that right now with this Cowboys team. After losing Dak Prescott, I think there was a sense of, well, this team just doesn't have the offensive firepower to keep up. How much can you ask the defense to do? We know the defense is good, but how can they go about it? And you've seen now this offense has responded with a different sort of game. It's more of the let's control the clock. We need to do a better job of running the ball. You know, and it's not just how they deploy Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. It's also they made a concerted effort in the offseason to get bigger, more physical on the offensive line. You didn't necessarily think you would see that early, but you've seen it in these last two games. So I think their identity is coming together in a way much like it did last year early in the season, coming off of a significant injury on one side of the ball.
David, you've seen quite a different in terms of the perspectives of backup quarterbacks. I think you've seen Gary Hogaboom. You've seen Andy Dalton. you know, we got Cooper Rush, and I would have never thought he would have won these two games. He's 3-0 as a starter. And remember last year, all three of us were in Minnesota, and he won that game on the road. And then obviously he's won the two games here. Just how surprised are you that Cooper is kind of getting this done, you know?
Well, it's not just about us being surprised, right? What about this coaching staff and this organization? Because last year, you know, Garrett Gilbert was going to be the backup quarterback. There was right. No question about that. Mm-hmm. He played his way out of that role in camp, and it was like, well, okay, let's kind of settle on Cooper Rush here by default. This year, there were high hopes for Will Greer. It's like, well, this is a guy that has a little something. We can develop him. Mm-hmm. We know we've seen Cooper Rush do it in a game, but they were really intrigued by Will Greer, wanted to see what he could do. Once again, Cooper Rush withstood the challenge. But, you know, if Dallas was really that convinced and the rest of the league was convinced about what Cooper Rush was, they would never have left him out on the open market to bring back on the practice squad to start the season. Now, you make that same move today after what Cooper Rush has done in these two games, there's no way Cooper Rush comes back here. I think some other team would have signed him to the active roster and said, look, you can compete for a starting job for us. Now, again, I don't want to read too much into two games, but only three quarterbacks in Cowboys history have won their first three starts, and it's Jason Garrett, another redheaded backup quarterback.
The great Jason Garrett.
Cooper Rush, and some guy named Roger Staubach.
He was pretty
good. If Cooper Rush wins this weekend, he will be the only quarterback in franchise history to win his first four games as a Cowboys starting quarterback. And that's no one would have projected that sort of start, but it's certainly within reach with the way he's playing, the way this defense is playing, and the special teams contribution you're getting from this group. And the fact it's at home, the fact Washington is struggling, this is – for them to have lost Dak in the opener, as bad as the Cowboys looked in that opening game, for them potentially to end this weekend 3-1, I think they have to consider would be a huge success And they've at least put themselves in position when Dak comes back. They know they didn't lose ground. Let's see how this thing plays out, because they always thought they were going to be better at the end of the season than at the start. But a lot of these young players have really stepped up.
Let's put them in the Ring of Honor. I think we should do it, Michael. When we see Jerry after the game this weekend against Washington, we should ask Jerry about Cooper Rush in the Ring of Honor. I'm for it.
Well, now, based off of Jerry's comments last week and about how basically it was Cooper Rush's job to lose, I mean, now shouldn't we ask him how he compares to Troy Aikman and Roger Staubach in the pantheon of Cowboys quarterbacks?
David, I'm not going to waste your time or our listeners' time by asking you the biggest pleasant surprise of the Cowboys season. I think everything you just said about Cooper Rush answers that question. How about the biggest disappointment? What, through three games, they're 2-1, not everything's perfect. What to you has been the biggest disappointment thus far?
Well, it's still, you know, we're talking about these last two games, but you still have to look at that first game as well and what they didn't do in that first game when they felt they were equipped to be one of the best teams in the NFC from the start. You know, I would say C.D. Lamb's inferior response in that game, in his first game as the lead receiver, is something that jumps out. Now, you've seen signs of these last couple of games. It's different. You saw the good and the bad of C.D. Lamb in that game three. And, yeah, I will say this as well. I think so often there's a myopic view of we just watch and follow what's going on with the Cowboys, and you watch C.D. Lamb and go, and how often did all three of us hear this early in the year from fans and other people going, lead receiver, please look at some of the other top lead receivers in the league. Look at Lamar, you know, Chase, look at Justin Jefferson. I mean, those are true lead receivers. Now look at those two guys over the last 2 weeks and what their stats are compared to C.D. Lamb. And you could flip that argument right now and just go, well, really? CeeDee Lamb has better numbers than either one of those guys over the last 2 weeks. So this changes on a week-to-week basis. And that's so often what you see in this league, especially at the receiving core. You have dominant elite receivers, but when they have a dominant week, most defenses now can take an elite receiver out of a game and go in with the game plan of, okay, we'll let all these other guys beat us because we don't think they can. And, you know, CeeDee Lamb, I think, is still struggling a bit for the first time in his NFL career of being the guy that goes into every game and defenses say he's the offensive piece we're going to take out. And really, you look at the Cowboys offense as constructed right now in the passing game, that's the only guy you're going to say that about, right? So every single week, defensive coordinators are going to say, okay, let's take him out of it. Let's see how these other guys respond. And that wasn't the case in the past. It was always a moving target between him, Amari, and Michael Gallup, depending on the matchups.
Well, David and Michael, this week, Dallas has got the old rival, the Washington Commanders. They're 1-2. They opened the season beating Jacksonville, and they've lost the last two games. It was interesting to hear Mike McCarthy this week talk about when Washington lost to Philly 24-8, how he said, I didn't think it was a 24-8 game when I watched the coaches' tape. Well, we don't think Washington's that good anyway. So, David, who you got this week?
I did not watch the coaching tape, but I would say it was a 24-8 game, and that was reflective of where the two teams are. And what would you expect Mike McCarthy to say going into a game? I don't think he's going to totally dismiss a division opponent. Dallas has been so good in the division for such a long time, especially against the Washingtons and New Yorks. Dallas and Philly are clearly the only teams in this division that have a shot at the playoffs. Dallas, I think, under Mike McCarthy, has done a very good job of taking care of business where it needs to take care of business. So just with where Washington is right now, and sometimes you can overthink this, but you just want to reduce this game into one bullet point item. Dallas leads the league in sacks. I believe Washington leads the league in sacks allowed. That's what it's going to come down to. And we've seen where Carson Wentz now is at this stage of his career. And look at Carson Wentz's record against the Cowboys over the course of his career. This is a game Dallas should win. And I don't know that any of us have said that with unabashed certainty in any of the first three games. But the moment a player starts believing that in the NFL is the moment that you see these upsets. And that's what this team has to guard against.
Awesome. Well, thank you, David, so much for joining us. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. We have a practice week ahead of us, you know, but I think Calvin and I are on board with you that the Cowboys are going to win this game.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, thanks, guys. I enjoyed it. Thanks for that scintillating insight you often offer there, Calvin, at the end of that. I think that was really the exclamation point to the whole segment and what we were talking about.
Well, everyone's listening to the whole, you know, podcast, so they got my thoughts. So, you know, I don't have to just give it to them right here.
Well, if you like Calvin's thoughts, David, you're in for a real treat. Coming up, we'll talk about a player who is the Cowboys' most important veteran addition.
Or is he?
I disagree. Is next. All right, Calvin, since March, the Cowboys have signed a number of veterans to this roster in free agency. Their most impactful addition this season has been Jason Peters.
I disagree. The most impactful player on this team thus far has been linebacker Anthony Barr. And the reason why they signed Anthony Barr is to allow Micah Parsons to do his thing along the line of scrimmage. When you have Anthony Barr at linebacker paired up with Leighton Vander Esch, I'm going to tell you, those two guys solidify that position. As much as we've talked about Parsons being able to do many different things, line up as a defensive end, standing up, being an off-ball linebacker, lining up in the A-gap, doing all these kinds of different things, you need somebody else at linebacker. That's Anthony Barr. Now, Anthony Barr didn't have a tackle last week against the Giants. He did have a quarterback hit because you can blitz him. You know, he's a better blitzer than Leighton Vander Esch. And he can also cover in space, something that Vander Esch can't do, even though Vander Esch is having a very good season. But Anthony Barr, to me, is the most impactful player. And if you remember, Michael, maybe you don't, you might have amnesia, they signed Barr in training camp. They gave him a ramp up. He knows Dan Quinn's system pretty good. He knows George Edwards, who is the defensive specialist over there. He recommended Anthony Barr because they worked together in Minnesota. This guy can play. And that's nothing against Jason Peters, who just showed up off the street. But to me, it's Anthony Barr.
I'm really glad that you're making the argument, even if it's wrong, that Anthony Barr is the most impactful free agency addition for the Cowboys, because he has played really well, and he's so cerebral, and he brings a lot to this defense. And so, I think you're not wrong in terms of making an argument that he's been valuable, but where you do go wrong is saying that he's been more valuable than Jason Peters. Yeah. And yes, Jason Peters has only played 14 snaps as a Dallas Cowboy. Let's talk about those 14 snaps. The Cowboys rushed for 93 yards on 7 rush attempts, 13.3 yards per carry Monday night when Jason Peters was in the game. 13.3 yards per carry. When he wasn't on the field, they averaged 3.6 yards per carry. My argument goes much more beyond this very small, unsustainable sample size. That's a phrase of the day, sample size. Let's not get carried away with that.
It's but a very small sample size.
You did see the impact that he made. He no doubt was able to seal crucial gaps on two long runs, one by Tony Pollard and the other by Ezekiel Elliott. But what really is the key to Jason Peters' impact, what differentiates him from Anthony Barr, is the meeting room with Tyler Smith. He sits right next to Tyler in these meetings. They're watching stuff on tape, looking at the opponent. And I was told by Tyler right before Wednesday's practice, Jason Peters will lean into Tyler Smith and whisper him little nuggets about, obviously, this is what this guy likes to do, and this is what you need to do in response. Having a future Hall of Famer in your ear like that cannot be understated. And when you look at how Tyler Smith has developed, how quickly it's come, the impact that he's made at left tackle after having been a left guard in training camp and two preseason games, it's phenomenal. It's extremely important. And Tyler Smith's development, however impressive Anthony Barr has been, Tyler Smith's development is much more relevant and important for this Cowboys team's success thus far. And so you tie that directly to Jason Peters. His impact was felt before he stepped on the field and played those 14 snaps. And that's why he is the most impactful free agent that the Cowboys signed this offseason.
Can I whisper something to you?
Go ahead, old man.
Tyron Smith is on the team too, and he could talk to Tyler Smith. You know, in the locker room the other day, we saw Tyron Smith. He walked in. He was sitting with some of the young offensive linemen. They don't know if they have earwax coming out their ear or if they got blood coming out their ear, because he's educating them. So there's nothing against Jason Peters, okay? Because it's good to have an old guy mentoring you, because I've had a lot of old people mentor me over the years, and they failed because I don't listen to them. But I will say, for the most part, that, well, it's nice to talk to a guy and help him understand what the National Football League is all about. We got to make plays on this field. And you have a small sample size with your boy Jason Peters. Anthony Barr's played 3 games. He played 61% of the snaps on Monday night against the Giants. I would say my boy Anthony Barr is more of an impact of the 3 guys. Now, who have they signed in offseason? They signed Barr. They signed
James Washington. Peters
and James No Feet Washington. And
ooh, easy.
I mean, hey man. Okay, you're right. That's another story for another day. But Anthony Barr, okay, to me is the most impactful player. But it's okay. It's okay.
Look, Jason Peters, by the way, signed to the practice squad initially, helped the Cowboys out there. Mm-hmm. He signed to the 53-man roster on Monday, a 1-year contract, $1.12 million. None of that guaranteed. Very team-friendly. And yes, Tyron Smith is phenomenal. He's a Pro Football Hall of Famer.
He's going to Canton too.
In his own right. But it's also worth pointing out the fact that Tyron Smith has played 144 regular season games in his career. Jason Peters has played 229 games in his career. The wealth of experience is a little bit deeper with Jason Peters. And I would also say that while they're both vaults of information, you can't find a vault that's more readily able to be opened than Jason Peters, just in terms of his personality. I mean, he is just so about the youth on this roster. Right now, Tyron Smith is working on getting right from the hamstring tendon tear. But Jason Peters is locked in to making Tyler Smith the next great Cowboys offensive lineman, the next great first-round draft pick that hits. And right now, that's what it looks like. I'm not saying that Tyron Smith is not helping Tyler Smith develop. He is. He has been. But it is different with Jason Peters. And so that is why he's the guy.
The best thing about this segment is that we did not mix up Tyron Smith and Tyler Smith. I think we should get like an Emmy Award or something just for that.
Are there podcast awards? Because I'm with you on that one.
We should. Well, that's all the time we've got for Sports Day Cowboys this week. Thanks so much for listening.
The show is produced by Damon Marks, and you can stay up to date on every episode by following Sports Day Cowboys wherever you get your audio, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also find the show and more audio from our newsroom by following the Dallas Morning News in those same players.
Find links to everything we do at dallasnews.com/listen. You'll also find a special membership offer just for listeners. We also want to hear more from you, so email us your questions, comments, and voice memos at dmncowboys@dallasnews.com. You can also ping us directly on Twitter at @DMN_Cowboys and on Facebook at Cowboys Fan Central. For the Dallas Morning News, I'm Calvin Watkins.
And I'm Michael Gelkin. We'll see you again next week.